Shalom and welcome to Rambam Yomi. This is Rabbi Mati Novik. Join me as we learn the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, one perek each day. Today we'll be learning Hilchot Ishut Perek Yud Zayin. This perek continues the discussion which began in the last perek about how the ketubah is collected. Our perek begins with cases in which there are competing claims on the husband's property alongside the wife's ketubah. These could be debts owed to creditors or the ketubot of other wives. We will learn how the property is distributed when there isn't enough of it to cover all the claims. The perek continues to address cases in which the ketubah needs to be collected from a guarantor, from buyers, or from property which had been donated to Hekdesh. Finally, we'll get to a description of how land is sold so that the proceeds can be used to pay a ketubah, and how the ketubah itself can be sold or forgiven. Halacha Aleph. Mi shayah nasui nashim rabot umeit, kol shniseit batchila kodemet litol ketubata. Suppose a man had several wives, and possibly one or more creditors as well, and that before owing any of them money, he had enough land to pay all the debts he eventually assumed to all these people. Then the order of priority among these claimants is the order in which he became indebted to them. Specifically, the wife he married first has priority over the one he married second, etc. When he dies, every wife must take a shvua before collecting her ketubah that she did not receive any advance from the husband during his lifetime, like any almana must do, as we learned in the last perek. The Shulchan Aruch writes that each wife must take a shvua not only to the Yatomim, but to all later wives who will also collect property for their ketubot. The reason for this is the possibility that some plot of land collected by an earlier wife, call her Leah, may be found to actually be stolen land, and she will have to return it to its rightful owner. In this case, Leah gets to take land from one of the later wives, call her Rachel, because the husband married Leah earlier, and so her shibud comes first, as we explained. But Leah would need to take a shvua to Rachel before seizing her land, so we just include Rachel in the shvua made by Leah now to the Yatomim. Halacha bet. Bamedvarim amurim. Beshahita karka shaba'u ligbot mena knuya lo bishat hanisuin uvishah shalava. What if the husband acquires land only after assuming all the debts by marrying his wives and borrowing from the creditor? In that case, there is no priority among the claimants, and all have equal rights to the land. This is because at the moment the land was acquired, all the debts already existed, and therefore the land becomes meshubad to all the debts equally. Halacha Gemel. V'chein im haya zman haktubot v'ashtarot kulan yom echad, o sha'a achat, b'makom shekotvin sha'ot, chokin ka'achat, she'ein sham kodem. Ula'olam kol shekadam v'zacha b'mitaltilin k'dei chovo o k'dei ketuba, ein motzi'in miyado, she'ein din k'dima b'mitaltilin. There are two more situations in which all debts are considered equivalent and none has priority over any other. One, if all the ketubot and all the shtarei chov have the same date written on them, or the same hour in a place where the time of day is written in a shtar. Since the shibud on land begins at the time written in the shtar, no matter when the event which precipitated the shibud took place, the marriage or borrowing of money, all the wives and creditors have equal claim to any land owned by the husband on the day or hour written in all the documents. Two, movable property, metaltalin, lacks a formal shibud and is available equally to all claimants no matter whose shtar was written first. But this is only bidyevid. Whoever takes the metaltalin, ein motzi'in miyado. We don't take anything away. However, we'll see in halacha vav a case in which lechatchila, the metaltalin go to one claimant over the other. Halacha dalad. Mi shegeresh et ishto v'alav shtar chov, uva baal chov, v'aisha ligvot, v'ayu lo ma'ot v'karka kedei achov v'aktuba. Baal chov notel ha'ma'ot, v'aisha gova ktubata min ha'karka, v'im ein lo el ha'karka she'ein ba kedei lahagbot shnehem, v'lo haya ba'din kedima, notni notel ha'baal chov, v'im nishar la'isha klum, titol, v'im lav, tidache mipnei baal chov. Shari Baal Chov Hifsid Votzi Maotav. Vaisha Lo Chasra Davar. Sheotema Shaish Rotza Lisa, Isha Rotza Linase. If a man divorces his wife and has a debt to a creditor as well, let's assume that the debt and ketubah are equal, say 200 zuz, and he has both money and land, each in the value of 200 zuz, then the creditor gets the money, because he lent money, and the woman gets the land in payment of her ketubah. This is true no matter which of the two debts has priority. But if there is no money, only enough land to cover one of the debts, then it goes to whichever has priority. And if neither has priority over the other, like if the land was purchased after both debts were assumed, then the creditor gets paid first in full. He gets priority because he lost money by lending to the husband, as opposed to the wife who lost nothing. Her agreement to marry him is not considered a loss at all, because it is generally assumed that women want to be married. Halacha Hay applies the same din in the case of a man who dies and leaves behind a widow to whom he owes a ketubah and a creditor. And Halacha Vav adds that after the Takanat HaGeonim from the last parak, that a ketubah is collected not only from Karka, but also from Metaltalin, the creditor takes priority over the wife with regard to Metaltalin as well, and only from what is left may the woman collect her ketubah. Halacha Zayim. Hayu ketuvin b'ktubata nechsei tzon barzel, v'tana she'avdu o shelakachan abal, harehi b'nechsei tzon barzel shela, kishar balei chovot, v'nishmat shelo lakcha otan, v'lo natna, v'lo machla, v'choleket im balei chovot. We learned in the last parak about nechsei tzon barzel, property which the wife brings into the marriage, but is at the husband's disposal, and he owes her, in the case of divorce or death, the value that this property had when the marriage began. Even though this amount is typically written into the ketubah, it has the dinim of a regular debt, and not the special dinim of a ketubah. We saw a couple of examples of this in the last parak. Here too, in a situation of competing creditors, if the wife is owed nechsei tzon barzel, then for these, she has the status of a creditor collecting a debt, not a wife collecting a ketubah. Therefore, the other creditors don't have priority over her for this debt, as they do regarding her ketubah, like in the last three halachot. Halacha chet. Mi shemeit o geresh v'yesh lo nashim rabot v'ein sham din kedima v'ein lo kedei kol haktubot ketzad chokot ro'im im kishyechalek hamamon al minyan hanashim yagi al pchuta shebehen kedei ktubata o pachot chokot b'shaveh v'im haya hamamon yater al zeh chokin minenu kedei shiyagi al pchuta shebehen kishyo ktubata v'chozrot v'chokot et hamotar bein hanotarot al haderech harishona. In this long halacha, the Rambam describes what to do when there are several wives, none of whom has priority, like if all his land was purchased after he married all them, or if all the ketubot have the same date, and there isn't enough money or land to pay all the ketubot. The property division is based on the following algorithm. If there is enough property left for the smallest remaining ketubah to be paid in full, and for all other wives to receive the same sum, then this amount is given to each wife. And we repeat the procedure with whatever property is left. And if there isn't enough to pay the smallest remaining ketubah, then the property is divided equally and the process ends. The Rambam illustrates with a case of four wives who are owed 400, 300, 200, and 100 zuz respectively. That's 1,000 zuz altogether. But the husband has only 800 zuz in total when he dies or at the time that he divorces all them. The smallest ketubah is 100 zuz, and there is enough for everyone to get this amount. So each wife gets 100 zuz, and the fourth wife has no further claim. There remains 400 zuz to split up, and the smallest remaining ketubah, that is the one of 200, needs another 100 zuz beyond the 100 she already received to be paid in full. There is enough for everyone to receive this amount, so each of the three wives gets another 100 zuz, and the third wife has no further claim. That leaves only 100 zuz left to split between two wives. The smallest remaining ketubah, that of the second wife, needs another 100 zuz to be paid in full, beyond the 200 she already received. But there isn't enough for both of them to receive 100 zuz. There's only 100 zuz left altogether. So this 100 is split between the two of them, each of them receiving 50 zuz. The final division is therefore the following. 250 zuz for each of the first two wives, 200 for the third wife, and 100 for the fourth wife. The algorithm presented by the Rambam in this halacha comes from the Rif, based on his interpretation of the conclusion of the Gemara at Masechet Ketubot. But the rationale for this division is hard to understand. Why should some women have their ketubot paid in full and others not? The Gaonim suggest a more intuitive and fair method, which is also much simpler. Just split the property proportionally based on the value of each wife's ketubah. So in our example, the 800 zuz would be split among the four wives in amounts whose ratio is 4 to 3 to 2 to 1, because the values of their ketubot are in the ratio 4 to 3 to 2 to 1. This comes out to 320 zuz for the first wife, 240 zuz for the second, 160 zuz for the third, and finally 80 zuz for the fourth wife. This adds up to 800 zuz, and each wife is paid exactly 80% of her ketubah. The Ravid in his Asaga here notes that the Rambam follows the opinion of the Rif, and he remarks, "Eino mechuvar klal." It isn't clear at all. He doesn't suggest any alternative, and in his commentary on the Rif in Masechet Ketubot, the Ravid clarifies that he doesn't agree with the Gaonim either. Instead, he accepts a different opinion originating in the Mishnah there, which seems even more enigmatic than the opinion of the Rambam. For more about that opinion and the rationale behind it, the listener is strongly encouraged to read the article written in the 1980s by the game theorist Professor Yisrael Uman, available online both in Hebrew and in English, which sheds a fascinating light on this sugya using elementary mathematical concepts which weren't considered by the Rishonim and Achronim. Halacha Tet. Ha'arev la'isha b'ktubata, afal pi shekanu miyado, eino chayav l'shalem, shemitzva asa, V'hari loch yisra klum, v'im arev shel ktubat b'no hu, v'kanu miyado, chayav l'shalem, sha'av biglal b'no, m'shabed atzmo, v'gomer u'makne. If someone agrees to be an arev, a guarantor, for a ketubah, in the event that the husband is unable to pay it, then even if he committed to this by doing a kinyan, it isn't considered binding, because he meant only to do a mitzvah by helping the couple get married. He was not serious about committing himself financially. Unlike a creditor, a woman who is owed a ketubah didn't lay out any money, as we noted earlier in Halacha Daled. Therefore, the Arev did not seriously intend to guarantee anything. The Ravid disagrees and believes that if there was a kinyan, then the Arev is on the hook to pay the ketubah if the husband cannot, and this is a psak of the Rama as well. The Rambam goes on to say that if a father guarantees the ketubah of his son to his daughter-in-law, this is effective, because a father indeed commits himself financially to help his son marry. But for the Rambam, this works only with a kinyan. While for the Rama, based on a hasaga of the Ravid, not here but in Hichol Malve Velove, Perek Hafei, the guarantee of the father is effective even without a kinyan. Continuing in Halacha Tet, V'kablan shel ketubah, chayav l'shalem, af al-pi shalom kanu miyado, v'ezehu kablan, ze sh'amar la'isha, hinas'i laze v'ani noten ketubah zo. Avalim amar la, ani arev ketubah zo, ani poreh ketubah zo, ani chayav ba, v'chayotzei baze, patur, ela im ken haya aviv. Ha-megaresh et ishto, yadirana hanaya, v'achar kach tipara min ha-kablan, o me'aviv im haya arev, shema yachzirena, v'nimitzu osin kenunya al nechasav shel ze. A kablan is a much more significant commitment than an arev. He agrees to pay the ketubah even if the husband is able to pay it himself. Unlike in the case of the arev, this commitment is considered to be binding even for a ketubah, and even in the absence of any kinyan. However, in this case, we are concerned that an unscrupulous couple may take advantage of the generous kablan, or of the father of the husband if he becomes an arev. How? They might divorce solely in order for her to collect her ketubah from the kablan, or from her father-in-law, and then remarry. In order to prevent this and to ensure the seriousness of the divorce, the husband is required to make a neder before the wife collects her ketubah that he will never get any more hana from her, and this way they can never get remarried. Halacha Yud explains that the same concern and the same remedy apply if all the property of the husband has been donated to Hekdesh. In this case, because the shibud to the wife's ketubah preceded the donation to Hekdesh, Hekdesh must find someone, call him Reuven, willing to redeem the property so that it can be used to pay the ketubah. There is again a concern that the husband and wife may intend to remarry, and their entire divorce is a ploy to get the property back from Hekdesh at Reuven's expense. So in this case too, we make the husband take a neder to get no more benefit from his wife that he is divorcing. It would seem that the same concern should exist if the husband sold all of his property before the divorce, and now his wife has to go collect her ketubah from nechasim meshubadim in the hands of the buyers. Maybe they intend to remarry, and the divorce is only a ploy for them to get the land back from the buyers. Even though this concern exists, Beit Din does not require a neder in this case. This is because the buyer knew when he purchased the property that it was mortgaged to a ketubah, so it is his responsibility to take this risk into account when he makes his purchase. Halacha Yud Aleph. Habal shemachar nechasav v'acharkach katva yishto lalokeach dinu dvarim ein li'imach v'iskim al masav af api shekanu mimena harei zo torefet shelo katva lo ele kedei shelo ye beina uvein balak tata. ויש לה לומר, נחת רוח עשיתי לבעלי. אבל אם קנו מיד האישה תחילה, שאין לה שיעבוד על מקום זה, ואחר כך מכר אותו לבעל, אינה טורפת אותו. This halacha deals with a case where the husband wishes to sell some of his property that is meshubah to his wife's ketubah, and he wants his wife to give up her shibud on that property so that the buyer can feel secure that it won't be seized from him later. Whether this works depends on the sequence of events. If the husband first sells the property, and then the wife writes to the buyer, Din udvarim ein li'imach, I renounce my rights to this property, this is meaningless even if she makes a kinyan together with the statement. She can claim later that she was not serious, and only made the statement and the kinyan so as not to cross her husband after he sold this property. Nachat ruach asiti levali. But if the husband first agreed with his wife that she would relinquish her shibud, and she makes a kinyan, and only then he sells the property, then the relinquishment is effective, and she may not collect her ketubah from that property. But there can be a case where her concession takes effect even though it was done after the sale. If the wife refuses to accede to her husband's request to write Din Udvarim Ein Li'imach to a buyer, then her refusal shows that she is not afraid to cross her husband. So if she subsequently accedes to his request in the case of a second buyer, then she cannot claim that she wasn't serious, and she indeed relinquishes any right to collect her ketubah from that property. Halacha Yud Bet. Mi Shayilo Shtei Nashim. ומחר את שדהו וקנו מידו הראשונה שאין לה שיבוד על שדה זו ואינה טורפת אותה מן הלוקח והיה קניין המועיל שאינה יכולה לטעון בו נחת רוח עשיתי לבעלי ואחר כך מת הבעל או גרי שתיהן השנייה מוציאה מיד הלוקח שהרי לא קנו מידה ללוקח הראשונה מוציאה מיד השנייה מפני שהיא קדמה ולא הסירה שיבודה אלא מעל הלוקח וכשתחזור השדה לראשונה, חוזר הלוקח ומוציאה מידה, שרי קנו מידה לו, וחוזרות חלילה עד שיעשו פשרה ביניהם. Suppose that a man has two wives, Leah and Rachel, and that Leah has priority in collecting her ketubah because she was married first. Suppose further that Leah, and only Leah, relinquishes her rights in an effective manner, as per the last halacha, to a piece of property which her husband then sells to Reuven. This creates a halachic endless loop in the following sense. Leah has no rights to the property in Reuven's hands, but Rachel does. So Rachel collects the property from Reuven when the time comes to get her ketubah. But Leah has priority over Rachel, so she may take it from Rachel. Once Leah has it, Reuven may take it back from her, because she ceded her rights to this property to him. Now Rachel can again take the property from Reuven, and this loop continues until the three of them reach some kind of agreement about how to divide the property. Halacha Yud Gimel. Almana, bein min hanisuin uvein min hairusin, nishbat umocheret mikarka balav nifrat ktubata, bein bevei din mumchin, bein shlo bevei din mumchin, vehu shiyu ashlosha nashim nemanim, ויודעים בשומת הקרקע, ואחרית המחר על נכסי יתומים. אבל הגרושה לא תמכור אלא בבית דין מומחין, וכל המוכרת בבית דין לא תמכור אלא בהכרזה. This halacha points out another important distinction between a grusha and an almana in the procedure of collecting the ketubah, in addition to several distinctions between them that we learned in the last parak. If land needs to be sold in order to pay her ketubah, the almana may sell this land even without going to Beit Din. She just needs to find three men who are trustworthy and who are expert in evaluating land. But a grusha must go to a Beit Din of Mumchin to sell land in order to collect her ketubah. The reason for this distinction is that the husband has the right to insist that the land be sold by a Beit Din of Mumchin, so that it can be auctioned off to the widest possible audience, Bahachraza, and fetch the highest possible selling price. But going to Beit Din is considered demeaning for a woman. The assumption about a husband who dies is that he wouldn't want his widow to go through that, and therefore the almana may sell his land in front of any three experts in land evaluation. But when a man divorces his wife, he has no qualms about putting his ex-wife through the ordeal of going to Beit Din, and so she does not have this prerogative. The halacha also says that when an almana sells land, the achrayut on it lies with the remaining property of the yorshim, meaning if the sold lands turn out to be stolen and is seized by the original owner, then the buyer can demand compensation from the yorshim. What if the almana sold the land without even the evaluation of three experts? Is the sale valid? Halach Yudalid says that if it turns out that she sold it for the true value of the land, then this works. However, if she just took the land for herself as payment of the ketubah, even if she took the right amount of land equal in value to the ketubah, the other yorshim may take it back from her in exchange for money. In other words, the almana only has the right to sell land in order to collect her ketubah, not to take land for herself unless the yorshim agree. Halacha Tetvav indicates the limits of the effectiveness of her selling property on her own. Haytaktu bata matayim, umachra shave mea b'matayim, o shave matayim b'mea, nit kablaktu bata, ve'in laklum, uvilad shetishava shivuat almana. Haytaktu bata mea, umachra shave mea v'dinar b'mea, michra batel. Vafilu amra, ani achzira ta dinar leyoshim, michra batel. Suppose that the ketubah is 200 zuz, and she sells a piece of land worth exactly this much for the very low price of 100 zuz. Then she may not sell any more, because she already took 200 zuz worth of the Arshim's property. The fact that she fetched a poor price for it is her problem, and she suffers the loss. So too, if she sells a piece of land worth 100 zuz for the incredible price of 200 zuz. Even though the land was worth less than the value of her ketubah, she may not sell any more land, because by selling it, she obtained 200 zuz. In other words, the almana who sells on her own is constrained by the higher of two values, the actual value of the land and the amount she sold it for. The higher of these two amounts is considered collected and deducted from her ketubah. If the actual value of the land is worth even a little more than her ketubah, like if her ketubah is 100 zuz and she sells land worth 101 zuz for 100 zuz, then the entire sale is void because she had no authority to sell more than 100 zuz worth of land. Even if she is willing to pay 1 zuz to the Arshim so that the sale can go through, this does not help. Halacha Yud Zayin. Yesh la'isha limkor ketubata o litna b'matana. Im meta bal o gersha, yavo halaz vito, vim meta hi v'chaye bala, o kodem shnishpa'a, ein lo klum. A woman can sell or give away her ketubah to a third party. This means that if she eventually should collect her ketubah, if she and her husband divorce or if the husband dies, that instead it will be collected by the buyer. But if she dies while her husband is alive, or after he dies but before she takes a shvua that she is still owed her entire ketubah, see Halach Yud Bet of the last parak, then she never had rights to her ketubah, and so the buyer gets nothing at all. Clearly, given this risk, the price any buyer would pay for the ketubah is significantly less than its face value. Halach Yud Chet adds that when a woman sells or gives away part of her ketubah, she may collect the rest of it after her husband's death in the way we described above, in front of three experts rather than in front of a beit din of mumchim. Halach Yud Tet. Hamocher ketubata, bein lacherim bein levala, lo ibda sha'ar tnai ketuba. Vim hayala ben zachar, yoresh keneged ketubata zot shenim kara minichse aviv yater al chalko kedin tnai ze. Aval hamochelet ketubata levala, ibda kol tnai ketuba. Vafilu mizonot ein la'alav, umochelet ketubata eina tzricha kinyan velo edim kishar mochlim. She'inan tzrichin edin velo kinyan. Ela bidvarim bilvad, v'hu shiyu dvarim shadat somechet alihen, v'lo yu divrei schok v'yitul, o divrei tema, ela bidat nechona. Just as a woman can sell her ketubah to a third party, she can sell it to her husband. In this case, the husband simply doesn't have to pay her ketubah if it ever comes due, upon divorce or his death. She can also forgive the entire debt, that is, she can be mochelet on her ketubah. This mechila can be done without witnesses or a kinyan, but it is only effective if done in a serious manner, and not with words spoken in a joking or facetious tone. There is a big difference between the cases of mechira and mechila. If the wife sells her ketubah to her husband, then the ketubah fundamentally stands in its entirety, and she still benefits from all the tna'i ketubah listed at the beginning of Perek Yud Bet. But if she is mochelet her ketubah, then she loses the tna'i ketubah and cannot even claim mizonot. The Rambam seems to mean that she doesn't even get mizonot while the husband is alive. That's the simple meaning of his language, ein la'alav. And in addition, we'll see in the beginning of the next perek that even if she sells her ketubah, she does not get mizonot after the husband's death. So the distinction being made here between mocheret and mochelet must be referring to mizonot that she would get while the husband is alive. We note that Rashi disagrees with this point, because mizonot during the husband's lifetime is one of his d'oraita obligations, she'er, from the trio of she'er k'sutan ona, and the wife has no power to be mochelet on his chiv d'oraita. The Shulchan Aruch agrees with Rashi and quotes the Rambam as Yesh Omrim, but the Rambam must believe that just as a woman is capable of giving up her mizonot in the context of a t'nai, because it's a davar shebemamon, so too she can give up her mizonot by being mochelet on her ketubah. What is the reason for this distinction between mechira and mechila? Why does the mochelet lose all of her t'nai ketubah, but not the mocheret? We can understand why a woman may need to sell her ketubah if she needs money, like to help a needy relative, and this is the only item she can sell for a significant amount. This doesn't necessarily represent a zilzal, an attitude of scorn toward the ketubah. But when she is mochelet her ketubah, she gains nothing at all by doing so, and so her action is viewed as one of zilzal toward the ketubah. Therefore, she loses not only the amount of the ketubah itself that she was mochelet, but also all of the accompanying tnai ketubah along with it. Thank you for joining me in learning today's parak of the Mishnah Torah. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas you'd like to share, I'd be happy to hear from you. Send me an email at mtorahyomi@gmail.com. That's M as in Mishnah, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Yomi, Y-O-M-I, @gmail.com. Come back tomorrow as we continue with our next parak.